Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Next on the agenda is roll call, and we have all council members here tonight. And then after that is citizens' input. If you'd like to address the council, please raise your hand. We'll give you up to 5 minutes. And come to the mic, give us your name and address. I'll acknowledge you. Is there anybody that'd like to address the council? Everybody have a mic set, right? Looks like it. Okay. Looks yeah. Right. Is that me? Hold it up. Does it help? Do it that way? I'll put it in my pocket. That'll help. No, I don't think so. Feedback back there, all right? Or are we still getting it?
We're doing good now.
How come I'm hearing it?
I just turned it way down, so it's out of my ears.
Okay. Anybody else? Is it still just me? Everything okay now? Sounds like it. Okay, if there's anybody out there who'd like to address the council, raise your arm, your hand, or whatever. I'll give you up to 5 minutes on the mic and give us your name and address when you step up there, please. Still going, huh? Okay, is there anybody like to address the council? All right, then we'll move on. Do I hear a motion for the approval of the agenda?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Ken Johnson first. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mark Snyder second. Any questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes. Do I hear a motion for the consent agenda?
I so move.
Ken Kaler first. Dan seconded. Any questions or discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? All right, well, that passes also then. Great. Let me pull down here. Okay, next on the agenda is employee recognition of Dan Quick. And I see he did not make it today, but I'd still like to say something. Dan is receiving his 20-year plaque, and I guess I've really enjoyed Dan. He's a very friendly guy, and he has a lot of knowledge in the city. To me, it's been amazing how when we can't find something, he knows roughly where it's at. You know what I mean? He's just been here long enough that he knows where things are at. And this is his 20-year. He came in 1992 of August. He's our city's lead water operator and takes pride in his work. He always does quality work. He's a man that does his best with whatever he does. So most people know him as the cowboy guy that works for the city. He's the guy that always wears the cowboy hat, no matter where he goes, you know. And in fact, it's hard to recognize him without it. I've seen him a couple times without it. I had to look twice to see who it was. But that's sort of his trademark, is his cowboy hat. Dan has an AA degree from Big Bend. He has his cross connection specialist certification, his flagger certificate, as well as his water distribution manager Class 2 certificate. Over the years, he's a valuable member of the Water Public Works and an asset to the city, and you know, he just does great work for us, and we appreciate that. We look forward to him continuing work for us. So that's 20 years for Dan, and we just appreciate all he's done. Thank you. Okay, next on the agenda is Brent Stenton's Adams County Homeless Report. Brent?
Thank you. I do have a handout I'd like to give the council.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'll keep this brief. I'm with the Adams County Health Department under the umbrella of Integrated Healthcare Services. So within our agency, we have environmental health, personal health, low-income housing programs, community mobilization, mental health, chemical dependency, and that's it. And so one of the tasks that we've taken on is the low-income housing program. And this started a number of years ago. And the handout that I gave to you is the update of our 10-year ending homeless plan for Adams County. And this was a legislative program that was passed by the Washington State Legislature back in 2005. And that directed counties to create 10-year plans to cut their homelessness rate by 50% by 2015. And then it directed a few other program items that it's administered by the State Department of Commerce, formerly CTED, over in Olympia. A couple of the other programs was that we coordinate the 10-year homeless count. And so a number of the people here tonight have helped us with that. We appreciate that. That's when we go out and we actually knock on doors and go to areas where we know people may be having some issues with housing, and we inventory them and we count them, and we get some data on them, and then we put that into an HMIS program, which is the Homeless Management Information System. That's another requirement of this program, that we enter that data into the Department of Commerce HMIS system, so that we can track these trends, see if they're going up, see if they're going down, see if there are any common denominators as to why people are having trouble with housing in our community, so that we can take appropriate steps to end that and to cut it down. Another thing that we need to do is that we need to report back to Commerce on our progress and the activities that we're doing. There is a fee mechanism that pays for this work. It's the recording fee. So if you've recorded a document, maybe a home sale or something like that, there is a portion that goes to the local government and to the state government to pay for these type of programs. And I just looked it up. I wasn't real familiar with it, but if you record a document, $13.20 of that recording fee goes to the local entity, usually the counties, and then $4.80 goes to the State Department of Commerce, and that sustains their housing fund. And so these monies, along with some local matching funds, go in to support these programs. So basically, you know, back in 2005, a group of people were brought together. We had city representatives, we had county representatives, we had the county, the Adams County Community Network, we had the hospitals, we had CBHS, we had a number of local agencies that came together to write the 10-year homeless plan. And then we are required to update that. They said on a routine basis, but they never defined it. And so we submitted this. We had a stakeholder meeting. Eamon was at the stakeholder meeting. He thought this would be a good idea for me to just make a present to the council, so you at least are in the loop and know what activities are going on. We had that meeting on July 18th, and we also solicited a comment via email and things like that. And we took all this data and we rolled it into the amendment to the plan, which we submitted to the Department of Commerce on, I believe it was the end of July. We were snuck in just under the deadline, July 31st. And so we are waiting to hear back to see if we get any comments out of Commerce. But when I've, in conversations I've had with their program manager, she said that everything looked fine. It was looked similar to what other counties are doing. Many counties are going through this right now. Benton County is planning on submitting their plan in October. Grant County is in the midst of submitting their plan also. And basically what the amendment is that when we came up with the plan in 2005, we had some small goals and we had some rather robust goals. The small goals we are achieving, that's the doing the homeless count, working with clients as they come through the door through our other programs, assessing their housing needs, you know, doing emergency shelter vouchers, getting people connected with emergency sheltering, whether it be a family unit, mom with maybe a couple children, or it's a single male, working with our community partners, being a few local hotels and motels, the Othello Housing Authority. We actually have three shelters that we rent from them on a monthly basis, and we will put people in those shelters depending on need, depending on situation. And so it's this culmination of all these program tasks that we put together that makes up the program. Some of the large, more robust goals of building emergency shelter facilities and building emergency transitional properties for transitional housing, those are still in the plan. At this point, we don't have any money identified for things like that, and those are pretty large-scale projects. And so we haven't taken them out of the plan because if funding becomes available, it's much difficult to go back in and reauthorize things. But right now, those are on the back burner. So if you have any questions for me, it's just kind of an FYI as to what we're doing. We'll get feedback from Department of Commerce, and they may say, hey, we want you to tweak it this way, or it's fine, or things like that. And this was the statistical amendment. There's nothing that says, and this is something that Eamon and I talked about a little bit, there's nothing that says that, you know, we can't make an amendment on an annual basis as our situation, the needs change, the community changes. But we did need to get this in. If you have any program questions about exactly what we're doing, I brought Jenica Martinez. I wouldn't want to, I know she wants an opportunity to come up here and speak in front of the council, but I'm not sure if you have any questions. I can certainly, as these programs evolve, I can come back and make more contact with you and keep you in the loop.
Yeah,
or you can just take the information, read it, and call me if you have any questions.
No, we want to be kept in the loop as far as what's going on in our community. So how often do you do the count?
The count's required once a year.
Oh, it is.
Those parameters are all set by the state. And so we go out, in January, it's cooler. There's different reasons for that date, and we don't control that. Certainly you can do it more, but the resources that go into it, most counties are just doing it the annual once per year.
Any questions from council? So there's a group of people that set the parameters.
Yeah, it's really pushed down from federal requirements, and then the Department of Commerce pulls all this together, and they put out the rules, if you will.
Okay, I was curious where that was coming from. I was surprised that some of the homeless, somebody that's living with their parents was considered homeless. That surprised me. So
yeah, homeless is it's one of those, and every year I try to explain it. It's kind of a moving target. It's a buzzword. I think we're going to switch to struggling with housing or having housing issues, because when you say homeless, people say, I'm not homeless.
Yeah.
But there are five criteria that every house has to have, and if you're missing one of them, technically you meet the definition of living out of doors, which puts you into the survey. And you don't have to participate. Sometimes people won't answer the door. We take bilingual volunteers with us, so... All right.
Well, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it.
Thank you. So would you like maybe like every 6 months, something like that, or if significant changes occur?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay.
We want to know if something's going on. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for the time.
Hopefully it'll be getting better.
Okay.
Thank you for taking your time tonight for coming. Okay. Consideration for drilling a well number 9. Terry and Larry.
Good evening, Council, Mayor. Tonight we'd like to bring you up to speed a little bit on Well 9, talk a little bit about it. We have secured a site for the well. It's across 17, about a quarter mile east of 17 and about a quarter mile north. And we've selected a spot at the site for our test hole in that property. The Council Committee has met and has asked for cost differences between an 8-inch test hole versus a 20-inch production hole. Can you punch up those for me? This cost right here. Can you scroll up a little bit, Mike? Scroll up, can you? Yeah. This cost that you see right here at the bottom line, $775,571, this is the cost for punching a 20-inch production hole all at once on the site. The next estimate here is a cost, and this is a cost down here at the bottom, a little over $946,000 for punching an 8-inch pilot hole and coming back and punching it on out later to a 20-inch. There's a difference there of a little over $176,000 between those two. The committee met, and there was a question that was brought up at the committee about the hydrogeologic services that we pay at the on these two wells. And you see down here, the services is $44,000 here, and I believe it's $39,000 on the other one. We brought up this question because the core samples and the water samples will go into the proper agencies to be tested. So it's something that council probably needs to consider down here as to whether you actually would like somebody on site, and you might be able to save that money for something else. I've asked Larry Julius from GNO to come in case council had any questions over anything that they see or might want to ask on these two estimates at this time.
Okay, any questions by council? So you're saying the hydrologist services we do not necessarily have to do?
Well, they're down here. Larry can feed a little more into this, but pulling core samples and water tests will go into the proper agencies. So if there's something else more to that, Larry can kind of fill in on that. So I'll let him explain a little more about that.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Nice to see you all again. The hydrogeologist actually starts the project, a well drilling project, off by doing an analysis of the area that we're looking at for drilling a well. They'll do a historical review of Department of Ecology records. They'll look at surrounding wells to see what condition they're in, how deep they are drilled, how much production, whether there's been any bacteriological or water quality problems. Put that together and make a recommendation to us in the city as far as a good location to drill, or in this case, if the city has a selection already made, what they think of that selection. The hydrogeologist, a lot of what they do is based off of their knowledge of aquifers in the area, and Kevin Lindsay of GSI Water Solutions does have quite a bit of knowledge with what he's done in the basin as well as other groups that he's worked with. During construction, a lot of what they do is the actual hands-on working with the contractor. And it amazes me with the hydrogeologist, good ones, they can look at the screenings, you know, the ground-up bits of basalt that come out of the drill hole, and they can tell what type of basalt it is, what aquifer we're in, how deep into the aquifer it is, and when we get into a water production zone, how much water we can expect to be able to pump from that bearing zone. And most of the time, they're pretty right on. They also work closely with the driller as they get close to the point where we're at the depth we'd like to be at and the production amount of flow that we'd like to be at. And then they do something very important. They work with the driller to pump test the well. We're required to, by Department of Ecology, not adversely affect other wells in the area. So if we drill a hole and we get thousands of gallons a minute, that's great. But if an adjoining well, you know, a couple of blocks away, starts to dry up, or their recovery rate isn't as quick as it used to be, Ecology will say, you can't use the water at that amount because you're adversely affecting an already existing well. And there's two series of tests that stress the aquifer, and that's one of the primary tasks that the hydrogeologist works with the driller on. It's an 8-hour test and a 24-hour test, and they're out there for those full 32 hours pumping the well just to see how much water we can produce. And then looking at recovery time to make sure that we're not adversely affecting other wells. and also to see just how much recovery time there is to make sure that we're not depleting the aquifer too much. They then write a report after all the work is done that we need to send into the Department of Health before the Department of Health will allow the city to use that well as part of the process of making sure that we get all the paperwork done and the agencies, regulatory agencies, approve the process. So they are busy throughout quite a bit of the actual work on the well. And I say one of their important roles is working with the driller to know just what's happening as they're drilling through the different layers.
So he can come out ahead of time, do a study, and give us a rough estimate what they think might be the amount of water down there?
Mm-hmm. A lot of that is based off of other wells in the area.
Yeah.
East of Highway 17, there aren't that many large producing municipal wells like there are obviously within the city. I think the closest one out there is probably the port well at Bruce. And they'll look at that, they'll look at other records, other information they have from resources they have, reports they've done. Department of Ecology has an extensive listing of wells in the area. And they just do a paper study, if you will, a white paper on the aquifer, the area, and what they think will happen.
So wouldn't it be wise to have him come out to do that before we start any drilling?
Oh, definitely. They do that before any drilling's done.
Okay.
That's one of the first orders of work.
And that's part of that $39,000 fee of the one just going straight in and
right. And
start the 20-inch hole.
Absolutely.
Roughly, that saves $200,000 in the long run.
And I think it was Kevin that asked the question if the city did want to do a pilot hole before the production hole, because there isn't a lot of knowledge on the east side of Highway 17. Drilling a smaller hole is less expensive than a bigger hole. So if it turns up that the water quality or water quantity isn't there, we haven't drilled a 20-inch hole. We've just drilled a 6 or an 8-inch diameter hole.
And what would that run?
Pardon me?
What would a 6 or 8-inch hole run for your test?
Basically, the difference between the two estimates that are in your agenda package. One is with an 8-inch hole and one is without an 8-inch hole. So it's about $170,000. But Kevin has also indicated that he feels comfortable that if the city wants to go ahead with just a production well instead of drilling a pilot hole, he can support that and get the information together. It's just a question that he often asks clients to begin with on new wells.
Yes, Amen.
Larry, there's some steps that we have to go through this month as the Conservancy Board.
Mm-hmm.
Could you walk the council through those?
Oh, sure.
They know the process.
Okay. This project is a little larger in scope than most well drilling projects. One is because it's at a new site, and we have to go through the record of survey, surveying the site, legal description for the city. And because the existing water system plan calls for this new well to be drilled on the west side of the city, we have to go through what's called a change in point of withdrawal, a form that we send into the Adams County Water Conservancy Board. They approve it, then they send it on to the Department of Ecology for their approval. And while all that is going on, we also send the specifications to the Department of Health for their approval. So there's lots of regulatory folks involved when it comes to drilling of a well, especially on a new site. And then once all that's done, and we get all the approvals from the agencies, we can go ahead and start the drilling process.
So do we know the existing well that's there, what it's putting out?
I don't know if there's an existing well on site or not.
There's two wells on that site.
Are there?
There's a small shallow for a single residence, and then there's one that supplies the rest of the the businesses that are out there and a couple houses.
That's definitely something that GSI would look at then. The numbers that are in the estimate are basically placeholders. It's at this point our estimate of what we think the depth will be and the diameter of the hole. That may change a little bit as we get more into it and GSI does their evaluation. The city has a limitation on the amount of water they can pump. Back in 2001, the city received an approval from Ecology to consolidate all of its water rights, which was a good move because it allows you to use 100% of your rights without having to worry about the time that you use it in, so you can bank that water. And it says that there's, as of about 2010, about 1,500 gallons per minute still available. So we looked at the city's need for two wells in the comp plan and said, okay, the last well was drilled was about 750 GPM, so we figured two wells at 750 equals the 1,500 still available. Well, if well 9 comes in gangbusters, 1,000, 1,500 GPM, we can go back to Ecology, ask for more, and we've got a great producing well. We may not have to drill well 10, but it's available if we do.
Now, you had mentioned that the plan was to put a well in on the west side of town.
Mm-hmm.
What was the thought behind that?
Back in 2001, when the city consolidated all of its water rights, I guess the thinking, and this is conjecture on our part, the thinking was growth would be to the north and west, and there would be an unlimited supply of water out that way.
I know a little bit of history about that, and there was actually a piece of property that could be donated to us at the Tagaris Park site if we ever wanted to put a well down that area. But we felt that wasn't the best spot for a well at the time for the consumption that was going on down there, that we could supply their water needs okay without another well down there. And then that's when we chose to go with the location of well 8 at that time too, which was north of town.
Council have any comments? What are you thinking? Where do you want to go? What do we want to do?
I think the hydrogeologist is a really good idea because if he could come in and save us $175,000 mm-hmm. by not drilling that test hole, if he comes back with some really good information, then it would be good to sink that 20-inch hole because we're going to need every dollar of that back to run that transmission line back back to town.
What would something, how much would it cost to put, well, just an estimate of going under the highway? Because they won't let you cut across that, correct?
Yeah, it'll have to be what we call jacked and bored, which is a casing that's jacked or put under the highway. And we did some long range looking at cost. For about 6,000 feet of pipe, 16-inch pipe, which is the distance from the new site to where we could connect in on East Main or Cunningham near the Walmart site, would be about $1.3 million. That includes jacking and boring under the highway to meet the DOT standards.
You know, we kind of looked at this as far as the committee was concerned, and I think what we're talking about here is probably the right way to go. Let's get an idea of what the experts think as far as water is concerned and what possibility we may have out there. But after that, I think that probably if we're going to drill a hole out there, let's drill a hole of the right size instead of fooling around drilling an 8-inch turn around and drill another 20 inch afterward. As far as the pilot hole, it's not going to do you a lot of good. You're going to drill a hole and you're going to make it happen. I know we're gambling $250,000 here, but if the experts can tell us that they're reasonably assured that we're going to get even the 750 or 1,000 gallons a minute, we're still going to be better off than not having anything at all.
Right.
And we're still in a close enough area that we can still get that transmission line without costing us an arm and a leg. I know there's a lot of talk about go further east, get across the dike, and whatever. But you still got to think about the consideration of what it's going to cost you to get that water here afterwards. That transmission line costs you $1 million a mile. No matter how you look at it, that's what we're talking about here. And if you get a good flow of water again, I know they say, well, we got this one catch or this one bathtub, we're going to drain it. Well, maybe we are, maybe we aren't. We don't know whether it's going to be over the dike and we're into the other one, or whether we're going to be right dead center in that dike. But I hate to say it, but it's a gamble we got to take. And
good point.
And if the experts can tell us something different, why then we'll listen to what they've got to say and look for another site. But that's kind of my theory, and I think that's what the committee's consent was also, that same thought. You're going to save that $175,000, or maybe you're going to lose $775,000. I don't know which way you're going there, but at least we should have water anyway. Mm-hmm.
So that's where the council would like to see us first do the hydrologist survey of that. You have a rough estimate? Larry, what it would cost just to do that part of it?
$39,000.
The hydrogeologist portion of it?
Just to the point of getting ready to drill.
I have a breakdown, but I don't have it with me, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to make a motion here. That's what I was trying to.
Oh.
So.
It would be less than the $44,000.
Oh, definitely.
So it would there's a cap.
Less than that. Less than the
39,380.
Less than that. Which one? Yeah. That's what I was trying to get. Maybe you knew what it was.
Yeah, we've got a figure of 39 or a 44, whichever figure you wanted to use on this, as far as what we've got here. So.
And the difference there is the hydrogeologist would be out to site basically twice as much instead of just for the one hole. They'd be drilling two holes. So all of the costs, you know, the inspection time, the construction time, it all goes up.
So we made a motion up to $20,000 to do a, we call it a?
Analysis study. Yeah.
A hydrologist, up to $20,000.
That would more than cover it.
That would cover it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you want to go then, Council? Yeah. So I hear a motion then authorizing a hydrologist to come in and do a study of the property and a well quality and amounts or whatever that means, up to $20,000 approved.
I'll make that motion.
Gina first.
Second. I'll second.
Okay, Dan second. Any further questions or discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Where are we at? Second, 4.4 second quarter report from Adams County Fire District number 5. Chief Liebacher.
Good evening, Council. Mr. Mayor.
Welcome.
Before you, you've got our second quarter report for April 1st to June 30th this year. City alarms were 26 for that quarter compared to 22 of last year. Some of the items that we're trying to accomplish this summer, again, is our partnership with Public Works and hydrant testing. I can tell you the date on the report, we had one quarter of the hydrants of Othello done. We've jumped that up now, and later this week we should finish the second quarter, so half of them have been tested.
Good.
All the city engines have been pump tested, which is a NFPA standard that we do annually, and everything was successful on the pump testing. No problems, no major repairs needed.
That includes our other fire truck, the older one?
It included everything.
Oh, everything.
All the engines that require rating by survey and rating. And our narrowband project for radios is an ongoing process. Needs to be completed by January 1, 2013. We're on track for that. Our licensing for the district has been altered, and we are now narrowband licensed as well for the district. One of the trainings that we've got coming up, we hope to enhance our service to the public with a hazmat operations class for the firefighters. The training is put on by the same instructor that is at the North Bend Fire Academy over on the west side, and it should be a real good training. We're fortunate to get him over here and get our firefighters to attend that training. That's coming up in September. And lastly, our the city Chevy Tahoe was put in service in July and is a welcome addition to the city's fleet. So that was designated as a command vehicle. And you've probably seen it around town.
So. Looks sharp.
Looks real nice.
Some of the other things I'd like to bring up. Our response time continues to be within the 4 minute range. First in unit on alarms is 4 minutes, 11 seconds, which I'm still very happy with. I'm gonna try to maintain that 5 minute mark. Anything under that within our goals. But if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
How's your general base of firefighters? You're doing fine that way still?
Our roster.
How many firefighters you have?
We've got, I think we had 32 on the roster last I looked. And we're always looking for more, of course. Everybody out there nowadays is looking for volunteers. I read a headline probably once a week. That last week it was the Tri-Cities area are looking for volunteer firefighters. They're hard to come by. It's a huge commitment of time and dedication to be a volunteer nowadays, with the training requirements, the to meet state standards, is a big commitment.
So are they paid for all the training and everything like that, plus the call-outs?
Everything's paid for, all the training's paid for by us, and then we do have a point system for reimbursement for the volunteers. So, yes, there is a, I can't say it's a payment, but it's a reimbursement for time.
Any questions?
I see the Washington State Volunteer Firemen's Association is advertising heavily on TV, too, to volunteer in your communities. Do you see a need in the future, possibly, of hiring more fire personnel and manning the station all the time in the future? Or is that a long range?
Well, obviously with growth, we don't know how fast the growth is going to happen here. We can predict it, but stranger things happen. With growth, yes, we'll have to put on more personnel. The Washington State Firefighters Commission is actively promoting volunteerism via TV, via Facebook, via all the media sources. That was a Homeland Security grant they received 2 years ago, and it's coming up on the end of its life cycle. But down the road, there will be a need for more firefighters. Yes.
Okay. Well, we appreciate our relationship. It seems like it works really well. And I've gone to the meetings in the past, and I want to say thank you to you and all the people that work under you. So. You guys
thank
do a great
you.
Job, and we appreciate what you're doing in our community. So,
thank you very
people
much.
People safe and their property and things like that. So, tell them all thank you.
I will do that. Thank you.
Okay, 4.5, discussion of 0.5% sales tax. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. What we have before us tonight is an amendment to the Othello Municipal Code. On June 10th, 1985, Othello City Council passed Ordinance Number 722. It was an ordinance relating to the establishment of a street improvement plan and the intended use of the city's optional 1.5% sales tax. Section 2 of the ordinance states all funds collected from the city's optional 1.5% sales tax shall be used to fund the adopted street improvement plan along with available general funds and grants. Starting with the 2007 annual budget, the city began to allocate a fixed amount of $460,000 in sales tax to the street fund and has continued to do so for the past 6 years. Tonight, staff is proposing an ordinance that will amend Ordinance Number 722, or rather the Othello Municipal Code Section 1102020, titled Funding by Sales Tax Revenue Limitations, by amending Section 2 of the ordinance. This amendment will give City Council more discretion as to how they want to use the city's resources for budgeting purposes. Staff recommends approval of the proposed ordinance amending the OMC Section 1102020. Are there any questions?
I guess the question is this something the council's interested in? We don't have to vote on that tonight. We don't want to. It's up to you. But do you want to leave it the same as it is? So we'll bring it to you, see how you feel about it. It's not going to diminish the amount of street projects we do. We're way beyond that already. So just to maintain our community, it takes a lot of money on the streets.
Well, the money's going to all come out of the same pocket anyway. It eventually comes out of the general budget anyway.
On an average, what do we spend out of our budget on street fund projects?
On an average, what do we spend out of the street fund?
No, on our street repairs and that type of stuff.
Well, we did that. I think it was over the six-year period that we're talking about, we spent just over $2 million. These are in street projects. This isn't to operate the street fund. So there's two different things going on here. It costs quite a bit to operate the street fund.
No, I understand. But, I'm just talking about the projects.
But these are projects, yes. I think in overlays alone, I think it was around $1.2 million. And total projects, it was well over $2 million.
Mike, could you show the ordinance so it shows a strikeout of the three or four words we're talking about?
And we also spend about 400 and how much a year on maintenance? 400 and 60, 50,000, something like
60.
That also is being spent on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct, Mike?
On maintenance?
Is that the maintenance budget?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
For streets?
Right. Doing overlays and...
Oh, whatever.
Right.
Fixing potholes.
Right.
You know, whatever it might be.
This is the proposed amendment to Section 1102020 of the code. It strikes out the funding by sales tax revenue limitation and changes it to funding for the street improvement plan. And in the street improvement plan that we bring to council at budget time every year, we do a six-year plan, and then we do a funding analysis. And it'll include grants and transfers from other funds and using reserves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, we show everything we show in the plan. We show as being funded in one way or another. And of course, the plan is just a plan. When it's adopted, it doesn't mean we're going to actually do all the projects, but we do show the funding in that. And so this covers that.
Yearly, about how much is that 0.5% income?
Pardon me?
Yearly, about how much is that 0.5%?
I think today I was thinking about that, and it's about $610,000. Because I think we're budgeting about $1,260,000, right around in there. So half of that would be $610,000 or $630,000, somewhere around in there. And we're currently budgeting in that fund $460,000.
Plus projects and things like that. So, so in the $400,000 maintenance, does that include payments? Main Street, where's that come out of? Broadway, where else do we have?
Yes, well, no, the bond payment is coming out of the utility tax fund. It's not coming out of the street fund. And there's a Public Works Trust Fund loan. I think there might be two of them there in the street fund. And both of those are being paid out of the utility tax fund as well.
Okay. So, they are part of street expenses.
Yeah, so debt service isn't coming out of the street fund. So basically, the funding in the street fund that we budget every year for maintenance and operations includes, I think it's a little over $600,000 in interfund charges. In other words, this is the Acela program that Public Works uses. They put all their time into this program, and at the end of every month, it shows how much work they did in parks, how much they did in street, how much they did in water, how much they did in sewer. And then we take the money from those funds and transfer them into the street fund. Because right now the street fund is paying all of the labor and supplies and everything else for these other funds. And that was so that we could get all the costs in one place. I guess back in the old days, and of course I wasn't here, is when they would get a bill in, they would have to code it, break it out and code it four different ways. And so you almost had to have a full-time person just to code the payables, you know. And they went to this Acela program. So they took all the salary and benefits out of water, took all the salary and benefits out of sewer, and took all the salary and benefits out of the park department, and they put them in the street fund. And so now the street fund pays it all, but they keep track of their time. And at the end of the month, they give me a report, and I transfer the money from each of those funds based on the amount of time that they've spent in those. That's a little over $600,000 a year. And then we have the sales tax going in at $460,000. And there's some other smaller things. The motor vehicle fuel tax is around $45,000 to $50,000. And that's pretty much the funding for the street fund. That covers operations.
So this 0.5% is going in there now?
Yeah, that 0.5%, the 460 of it is going in there. The rest of it is in the general fund. Okay. So sales tax comes in from the state of Washington. And in fact, I have a report here, and I'll show it. We call it state shared revenue. They distribute, they put money into our account automatically every month, and they send me a statement. And on the statement, one of the line items is sales tax. It's not broken down. It just says sales tax. And that sales tax is the first 0.5% and the second 0.5% of our sales tax. It comes on in one line item. And we have budgeted $460,000 in the street fund. So what I do is I divide that by 12, and it's $38,333.33 every month. I take out of that sales tax and I put into the street fund. So at the end of the year, we have funded the $460,000. Okay? That comes out of that line item. The rest of that line item goes into the general fund, whatever the balance is.
Mike, how much is our debt services between, I know the Broadway project's almost completed, if not almost paid off, but we still have the Main Street one. How much was, do you roughly know how much that was total that we were paying a yearly?
No, I don't. You know, right now we're paying interest only on the Main Street project, on those bonds, until the City Hall bonds are paid off. And I think it was about a 5-year thing, so we're probably 4 years away from paying the City Hall bonds off. And once those are paid off, then we start paying principal and interest on the Main Street bonds. So I think the interest only right now, oh my gosh, I'd hate to quote a number and it could just be, seems like I'm thinking like $346,000 a year for interest only. And then it seems like we're paying about $175,000 a year on the City Hall thing. So once that goes away, then the whole thing will be rolled into the Main Street bonds, and they'll be paying that off. And the Public Works thing, I think, I don't know, we had an old Broadway Public Works Trust Fund loan that was paid off like 2 or 3 years ago, and then now we have another one now that we did, I can't remember when we did that project, about 4 or 5 years ago. We did some more reconstruction on Broadway. So that one could be another 15 years away. I think it was that we've gotten 20-year loans for our Public Works Trust Fund. So that one could be about 15 years away. But they're not as exorbitant in terms of that debt service as like the Main Street bonds. They're quite a bit smaller than that.
Okay. Well, and kind of how I was approaching this is those debt services bonds should actually be coming out of street funds. But the street fund wouldn't be able to support those. And that's why we're using the...
You know, it's a funny thing, because that's a good point. I could put the debt service in the street fund, but we'd have to fund the street fund from probably the utility
from
tax
the general
fund. You know, so it just didn't make sense just to be moving it and moving it and moving it. We might be realistic and just put it where it's going to be paid out of. And so I think that's kind of the story.
Yeah,
but you are right.
Even if we're putting the full 0.5% in the street repair, it wouldn't even cover it anyway, what we're paying out.
No, it would be.
Because it's all coming from the general fund, and we're still, right. Like I said, it all ends up coming out of the same pocket at the very end.
Right.
Out of the general fund. Now, would this give us more discretion on how we use these funds in street projects for maintenance? And because that's a big contributor, not just the overlays and the other project, but it's the maintaining of them afterwards.
Yeah. I believe it does give council more discretion, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about it. You know, the street fund has operated, I would say, fairly comfortably in the 6 years I've been here, and we haven't put that full 1/2 of 1% sale tax in there. And that was probably discretionary when it shouldn't have been. But nevertheless, it is what it has been, and the fund has operated very well. It hasn't gotten into trouble. We've maintained that fund doesn't require a huge ending fund balance or anything, but it's operated at a comfortable level in that time. So I think the discretion for council is that you know, we could maintain that if they wanted to, and continue to operate at that level without putting that full 0.5% in the fund. And if we take the difference out of the general fund, for instance, then what are we going to do with the general fund? We're going to rob Peter to pay Paul, and then we're going to be moving money around again and taking it out of the utility tax fund to go into the general fund, because there would be a shortfall of $150,000 in the general fund? You know what I'm saying? It's. I think this gives council a lot more discretion.
Well, I appreciate what the council back in 85 did for us. They gave us a wonderful tool for the future. They were looking at the future, and I think we need to continue to look at the future too. I think we seriously need to take a look at it. Like I said, this was 28 years ago. Times have changed quite a bit, especially how the city operates and the funding needs and the spending needs. And I really think we need to look at this seriously and how it would help continue to work for our benefit, because we need to think about the future too. Mm-hmm. It's been 28 years. It's another 28 years that we got to think about too. And the council in the future will probably be doing the same thing that we are now, going back, possibly changing what we have been changing now to fit their needs. And I really think we need to take a look at this and consider it. It would be a valuable tool to help us work our budgeting out a little bit better on the street fund.
Move it forward to the next meeting so everybody can think about it?
Yes.
That's what we brought up for you to have an opportunity to talk amongst each other, and then we'll move forward. So, okay. Any more discussion? Should we move on?
We need to move to table it until next meeting.
So do we need to move to table it until next meeting?
No, you can just tell us. We'll move it to staff.
Okay. We'll move it forward then to the next meeting. Okay. Thank you, Mike. Okay. 4.6, discussion of transportation benefit district. Eamon? Before Eamon starts, part of the reason we're bringing these up, when we finished in the spring with these, we never really made any decisions. We had a big discussion and stuff, so we'd like, I guess the idea is we're trying to find out what we're thinking, where we're going. So, same with this one, we'd like to move forward to the next one after we're discussing, and hopefully, you know, if we're not interested, fine, we're done. You know what I mean? If we're interested in maybe going to a vote, then we'll wait for the time when we can do that, or if we want to put up whatever we're going to do. But so that's part of the idea behind this, is to bring it back to the table and hopefully come up with a final consensus on where we want to go with it. So go ahead, Ian.
Thank you. Good evening. Tonight's the night to discuss streets and how to fund them and where we're going in the future. The item tonight, the question for the council is, do you want to consider the transportation benefit district at your next meeting, which is the 27th, for adoption or not? Tonight is informational only, and we're going to review what the transportation district is all about, how it comes about, your authority as a transportation benefit district, and some options for fees that you have. First of all, the City Council has completed a requirement for the Transportation Benefit District, that is your public hearing. In fact, you've had two, one in March and one in April of this year. So those are out of the way. So now we're going to go through the PowerPoint. You've seen this before. A few things, very minor, have changed. We'll review those and talk about your legislative authority. So what is a Transportation Benefit District? It's from the legislature, because they couldn't fund small cities. They gave small cities, or all cities actually, a way to create revenue. And it's our obligation as staff to bring revenue sources to you as a legislative authority to see if you want to impose them. So that's why we're here tonight. So the state legislature has given you the authority to create a transportation benefit district. It is not subject to a referendum or initiative. And the reason the state did that is in order to meet the street improvement demands created by deteriorating streets, the need to identify new revenue sources is paramount. And as you know, when you drive down our streets, they are in need of repair. We have done a nice job over the past 9 years on our neighborhood streets, but now we're at our big streets, our arterials, that need some help. This would be, again, a way to create revenue. The Transportation Benefit District is a quasi-municipal corporation and an independent taxing authority. In other words, if you create this, there's another taxing authority, much like a water district, that you become. You have that ability, and there's some limits that you have. We're going to go over those. It's created for the sole purpose of acquiring, constructing, improving, providing, and funding transportation improvements within the district. It offers flexibility, allows cities and counties the ability to work together. Let's go to the next one, Mike. So how is it created? Recall that there's must be a published notice of a public hearing, which you have done. You conduct the public hearing. Then you move on and adopt an ordinance. Now, you have an ordinance for your review tonight, but we're not asking you to make a motion to adopt it. It's just on the table so that you know what's in it. And what's in it are these three things. They must finding creating a TBD in public's best interest. So you would find that. You would say, yeah, this is in our best interest to do this. It identifies the boundaries of the TBD. And we talked about the city limits as being the boundary. That's why city is on here. It lists the functions and powers of the transportation benefit district. In other words, what are your, what is your authority based on the RCWs if you create this? And the fourth thing is a description of the proposed transportation improvements. The function of the transportation benefit district, if you choose to create one, it creates a governing board of the TBD is the Othello City Council. It's you. So you would have a separate meeting acting in the capacity and under the authority of the transportation benefit district. Serves as a separate government, much like a water and sewer district. Conducts business independent of city council meetings. So you could have a city council meeting adjourn and then go into a meeting, a transportation benefit district meeting, if you chose to do that. Has the authority to exercise the statutory powers set forth in chapter 36.73. That is basically reflected in the ordinance that you have. So if you create this, obviously it's a revenue source, so somebody's going to be accountable. It creates a treasurer of the TBD, is the city finance director. There are two ways to create revenue through the transportation benefit district. One is voter approved. So if you decide to send things to the voters, what can that be? One, property taxes, a one-year excess levy or an excess levy for capital purposes. Two, up to 0.2% sales and use tax, an annual vehicle fee above $20, and that's going to be important in a minute, and up to $100 per vehicle registered within the district, or vehicle tolls. And I will go back to that one, Mike, I'm sorry. I will tell you that the state is talking about vehicle tolls on highways. They have been for several years, but the discussion seems to be getting more attention lately. Okay, Mike. The second way to create revenue through the Transportation Benefit District is non-subject to voter approval, which means you have the authority to do these things. An annual vehicle fee up to $20 per vehicle. Now, we talked about that, $20. We said it may increase with the legislative action this last year. It did not. There was lots of discussion, but it remained at $20. It did not go to $40. So $20 per vehicle registered within the district. This fee is collected at the time of vehicle license renewal, and that's done by the state. So the state collects all the money. Of course, they're going to get their 1% cut. Transportation impact fees on commercial and industrial buildings. Residential buildings are excluded. In addition, the city must provide a credit for commercial or industrial transportation impact if the respective city has already imposed the transportation benefit district fee. Financial impact, most likely funding option being considered by several jurisdictions is the annual $20 per vehicle license fee, and a lot of the surrounding cities have adopted that. There is a 6-month delay in collections from date of authorization in early January. Othello has 43 miles of roads, and this is just kind of to highlight the dollars required to repair or fix the streets in Othello. Othello has 43 miles of roads. To repair a 2-inch overlay only, not a full reconstruction, but an overlay, the total estimated cost is $924,000 per mile, and we have 43 miles. For total reconstruction, the total estimated cost is $2.7 million per mile, and we just did Main Street, and that's a great reflection of that cost. So now we want to take a look at revenue calculations and alternative calculation using the Association of Washington City ratio. We're looking at 2 years, 2012 and 2013. And you'll note that AWC ratio is 0.875. That's the first line here. The Othello population, and we have changed this to reflect our current population. We're almost at 8,000 now. The license fee is still $20, a percent of the year. There's about half the year left in 2012 and a full year, 100%, in 2013. So what revenue would the city realize? This half year, about $65,000, and a full year in 2013, about $131,000. The next category reflects the 1% that the state gets. And you can see on a full year, they get about $1,300 for administering the program. So the total, the estimated net revenues, I'll just use 2013 for a full year, about $129,000, $130,000. You can see the calculations below using the city population, the formula, the $20 license fee, and the DOL charges. We just went through all of this on the above charts. Any questions on this chart? Let's go to the next one, Mike. The State Department of Licensing has a location code for every city. The location code for Othello is this, and the count of vehicles is 4,845. And I thought that was interesting to know. We have almost 5,000 vehicles running around in a 43-square mile area. Anyway, I was trying to compute how many police cars per day per mile should be driving by somebody's house today, and I didn't quite get there, but anyway, I was thinking about that. So when would the city receive money? The lower chart with the caption in red shows January through December, shows when distribution of funds comes. You can see it's over 9% September to January. So that's when the bulk of the money would come in, and that would be a budgeting issue for us to make sure expenses match those revenues when they came in. Kind of like our property taxes. They come in May and November, and we have to watch that in our budget because that's a huge amount of money for us. What's the next slide, Mike? So what vehicles are subject to the fees established by a transportation benefit district? Obviously, passenger vehicles, trucks 6,000 pounds or less, motorcycles, commercial passenger vehicles, tow trucks, house moving dollies, taxi cab, and we have a cab in the city. If you haven't seen it, it's parked across the street a lot, but we do have a taxi cab in the city. For hire or stage vehicles with 6 seats or less, and you can read on, mostly private associations with the vehicles. The vehicles that are not subject to any fees from the Transportation Benefit District are all farm vehicles. Campers, off-road vehicles, snowmobiles, mopeds, basically commercial type vehicles, government vehicles, private school vehicles. And I hadn't seen this one until today when I was rereading it. It says vehicles, property registered to disabled American veterans. And I don't know how many we have in the city, but I thought that was interesting. So what's the next slide, Mike? So to kind of recap and give you again a general overview of establishing a transportation benefit district. What does it do for us? The revenues from the $20 license fee may reduce the general fund subsidy of street funds, and we just talked about that. Maintenance and operation expenditures if the general fund was used. In our case, it is. It creates a funding mechanism where there's a clear connection between user group, the drivers, and the vehicles, who uses our streets, and use of roadway network. The bottom right-hand corner, the annual $20 vehicle license fee is a flat rate. Once you establish it, cannot be changed unless it's voter approved. Okay, you can't, the Transportation Benefit District can't arbitrarily make it $25 or $30 unless by legislative action or council or voter approved. The last window on the bottom left talks about the funds from Citywide Transportation Benefit District are dedicated and must be for the maintenance, preservation, construction, City of Othello transportation infrastructure, i.e. our streets. So this is identified funds that can't be used for anything else if you decide to create a transportation benefit district. So again, a question to council is, do you want more information and it brought back at your August 27th meeting for a vote, or do you want it to die tonight?
Transportation benefit district, it has to be in place in order for us to get grants in the future for our streets. Is that correct?
That is not mandatory as of yet, but in talking to people on the transportation TIB improvement board, they say they do look at that. Has the city exhausted all of its funding mechanisms and capability to get grants? It's not in writing yet, but they do look at it.
I guess my thought is we've got probably more people out of the city of Othello limits that are using our streets also. And to me, I think it would make more sense to have that 0.1, 0.2% sales and use tax. You know, because I don't know what the difference in how much that 1% or 2% would be. But if it's just the people in the city, $129,000, you're not getting very much streets. I know we do budget more also, but I guess I'd have to see, you know, what that 0.1 or 0.2%, and I know that would have to be voter approved, but mm-hmm. I would kind of lean towards that way, but I guess I would have to see what the 0.1%.
That's an excellent question. In fact, that's the balance in what I believe you should look at, which one benefits the city more. The issue is who drives on our streets, what trucks drive on our streets. So that's an excellent question on how much money that sales tax would represent. And we had it last time we discussed, and I was going to look for it today, and I forgot. Do you remember, Mike?
Yeah. I read a number from the and it's just about double. It's going to be around $250,000 to $260,000 as opposed to $139,000.
And
that's
at point
two. And Mark, yeah. I kind of agree with you, Mark. For one thing, I think any new taxes or fees need to be voter approved because it's an increase. And the only way to do that is to create the transportation benefit district in order to do that, to bring it to a vote of the public. Out of the public hearings that we had, I felt that most of the public was in favor of doing the 0.2% because it would be more fair of a tax spread out through more of the people using the streets. The revenue would be a little bit greater too, and might meet our needs a little bit better. But we do have to create the district in order to bring that to a vote of the people also too.
Right, and that's an excellent point Councilmember Johnson brings up, is first you have to create the benefit district, then you as a board decide which route you want to take for funding.
On that, the whole county or this part of the county votes on that?
I'm sorry?
If we go with the 1.2 for vote, that's the whole county and this end of the county votes on that? How does that work? Or is it just the city people vote on it? If we put it out to vote?
I don't know. That's,
you know, it's just
the city? Yeah.
Oh, really?
Right, because it would be taxing in the city.
We're only taxing within the city.
Okay. Yeah, like Walmart's in the city. That's right. But everybody that comes in to buy, like from the county or wherever else, they would pay that tax in the city.
The ideal situation is to get the county to go with that with the panhandle portion here and take care of it in the whole panhandle, but they don't want anything to do with it. They want to stay away from it. So it's got to the point where the city's going to have to do something to make this happen, and I kind of agree with you. I think that's the way to go, but we need to do this first. to make anything happen. We've got to create this district before we can do any of these.
Right.
Okay, so the council would like us to bring back an ordinance creating the district?
Yes.
Next week?
Yes.
Or in 2 weeks, I mean. Okay, well, we can work on that. And then Mike maybe have some other options. I have him working on a few things, so we'll see if there's anything else out there that we're missing also. But we'll bring that in 2 weeks if there is something. There may not be, but. Anything else, Amon?
No.
I'm kind of like Mark and Ken in that if you do it by licenses, you got 4,000, somewhat 100 cars. Right. And I know in the school district and the hospital district, your population is close to 13,000 to 14,000. So those extra 6,000 or 7,000 people are primarily using our streets a good share of the time. They come in, they bring their kids in, they go to the hospital or in town. So it seems like to me that 2% would be better, 0.2% would be better than the $20. That's where I stand.
Good point.
I agree with you, Dan. And it also goes back to the old theory, you know, nobody likes to be told they have to do something. But if you put it to the vote and you ask them, sometimes it's in their hands and it shows good faith between the community.
Good. That's what we're looking for, direction.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amon. Okay, 4.7, resolution authorizing use of city property. Molly?
Do I have to excuse myself for this one?
Excuse me just for a second. Catherine Charles does not have to excuse himself, does he? You don't have any interest, no, make any money off the deal?
Oh, no. Wish I had the money I spent on it. So,
so Charles would be able to vote on this one, then fine. No, you're fine. If you want to stay, it's up to you.
I'll stay. I'll abstain, though. Okay. I'll vote.
Go ahead.
Good evening, Council. The city has received a request to use the Lions Park softball fields to host the Latino State Softball Championship Tournament Friday, August 24th through Sunday, August 26th. The tournament is returning to Othello. This year, it is estimated to have about 24 teams so far. They've booked a DJ to provide music throughout the weekend, and it's been assured that the levels will not exceed those set forth by city ordinance. Public Works will provide 2 staff members for 8 hours each day to provide field maintenance and upkeep. And then with this, with council's approval, Mr. Garcia will enter into a facility use agreement with the City of Othello to provide a certificate of insurance for use of the park. It is estimated that Public Works will spend about $1,600 with extra trash cans, porta potties, and staffing for this event. And with that, Burger King, local Burger King, has said that they will cover $900 of these costs, which is very nice of them. They are a sponsor of the tournament, so they gave us money last year, so they are compensating us again for some of those fees. So we just ask that, we are just here to recommend the resolution to approve the use of the city property for August 24th through 26th for the Latino State Softball Championship Tournament.
Questions or comments? Nope. Okay, so do I hear a motion to approve the resolution authorizing use of city property for the 2012 Latino State Softball Championship Tournament?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Mark first, Gina seconded. Any further questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same. And one abstain, Charles, correct? Okay, then that passes. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, 4.8, ordinance amending OMC chapter 9.04, titled Vehicles. Chief Duncan.
Council, good evening. Yeah, before you is an amendment to an existing ordinance. Currently, it is against the law for any unauthorized vehicle to be driven in the park or utilized in the park inside the boundary. And from time to time, that particular ordinance is violated on a regular basis with people driving barbecues in and their picnics to set up. And so we started looking at this because we were getting citizen complaints, and it really isn't clear what the penalty for driving in the parks is. Without the clarity, it puts it into a realm of when we issue a citation, we got to write $5,000 on it, and then it just kind of leaves it up to the court, any amount between zero and that $5,000. So what we want to do is we want to amend that section of that ordinance to clearly specify a penalty. The penalty, which range, which I put in here, is a C-12. And if you see by the document that I sent with you, which is the matrix for our C class civil infractions, you'll see that a C-12 is about $110. So the fine would be $110 for driving in the park. If you got caught, the police officer would just automatically write the $110 fee. That fee would not be could not be reduced or done away with by the court, because that would have to be maintained all the way through the process, and it would be easier for the officers to understand. Currently, the RCW fines, the normal range is about $124 for a particular violation. If you're on a stop sign, it's $124. If you drive it out with your headlights, it's $124. So this is just under that range, and I thought that was fair. So what we're going to do is actually add an amendment to that, and it would be section 040 to establish a C-12 penalty for a violation of 940030, which is driving or operating a vehicle unauthorized in the park.
Can we currently bill a person that drives in the park and know that they have damaged?
If we could catch a person who drove in the park and broke the sprinklers, then yes, they could be billed for that, either through a civil process, or we could charge them with non-mish, which would be driving in the park, which they're not supposed to do, and they damage the property, and we'd be able to get restitution through the court. So there are mechanisms to do that. One of the most recent leaks was a fairly expensive leak. It caused a pump of water underneath the sod. And I'm not sure that we really know how it got broke, but it got broken, so it was a fairly expensive proposition for public works. But that's one of their main concerns, is because every time that we have an event, if we don't get out there first, mark all of the sprinklers, and somebody runs over it, and these are professional, high-grade, high-class sprinklers, and they are expensive, and of course then it takes time to go ahead and fix them too. So this will make it a little bit clearer for the officers. They don't have to search around and try to figure out. We'll just put it right on their little cheat sheet to catch anybody driving in the park, and it's not an emergency vehicle or a city utility vehicle, and they don't have a tag issued by the city clerk's office. They get a $110 ticket.
Okay, how does this work for such activities like what's coming up this weekend, the 4th of July?
If they're authorized vehicle in the park, they get a window or a mirror tag, hangs on the tag. Now, we've been in discussions in future events. What we're planning on doing is actually having a courtesy vehicle where one car, if it was a taco wagon or the cotton candy machine, that vehicle would be allowed in. They'd get one authorized permit. Anybody else that was affiliated with that vendor, wanted to bring in ice or whatever, would stop and check in at the courtesy vehicle, and they would reuse gators to ferry that stuff in. That's going to keep us even cleaner than what we are now, because with each event, each vendor gets like two vehicle tags, but it's still a nightmare to try to sort that out, because one person gives it to the next person, and some people don't have them, and then you got to try to find people to kick them out of the park. So I think Terry's working and designing a system that's even going to be a little bit cleaner. But to answer your question, they can get a window or a mirror hanger. We know that. We know what color it is and what it's dated. That it would be considered an authorized vehicle.
That would be my question too. On the, you know, on event setup, sometimes you're running stuff in. Good example is if you have too many vendors at one time that want more than, you can't accommodate that. You or if it needs to be done now. You know, those little situations we have to think about. We can't. We do staff people there. You know, we'll staff a couple for Saturday and a couple for Sunday and what have you. But doing that type of courtesy stuff and shuttling stuff in is going to take them completely away from servicing bathrooms and that type of stuff. They're going to end up being a gopher.
Service vehicles could be required of the event sponsors. It doesn't have to be the city's job. But that kind of a system is used at the major fairs around the state to keep people from driving in all over the place without any control. So there is mechanisms and there are ways to do it. Doesn't mean that we have to do it. We can make that a requirement of the sponsors.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying we have to make sure that we don't overstep our commitment, especially on the front side.
Sure. I don't think that requiring people not to drive in parks and break city property is overstepping our bounds.
And I didn't say that. That's not what I was referring to. So don't misconstrue what I was trying to explain. I mean, I'm just simply saying let's not overcommit ourselves on the physical part of it.
Sure.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and then we'll work that out with Terry and when the events come up when we have these big meetings with the sponsors.
Yeah. And over time, I think we'll be tweaking it, I'm sure. You know, good concern you have.
Yeah, well. I mean, there's got to be a happy medium in there.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. You know, you don't need 40 vehicles running in and out of the park.
If you drive by most weekends, you usually find cars parked out at the shelters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They shouldn't be there.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to prevent.
Yeah.
And I know Quan is a great problem for this, and even put barriers up halfway between with chains. And I noticed the last few times I went there, they've actually been torn out. I've even had somebody at the park said they just seen a person hook up to it and pull it right out, and they drove their vehicle in. So.
And the pickup trucks can drive right over the curbs, the parking blocks. Yeah, so it is a park. And I think Kiwanis is the biggest problem that we have.
Yes.
And that park is set off. The parking lots are not visible real well. It's covered with trees. So as you're cruising by, you don't necessarily know his car is down in there.
Any further questions or comments? So do I hear a motion to move? We amend the Othello Municipal Code 09.04 and add section 040. Establish a C-12 penalty for a violation of 09.04.030.
I'll make that motion.
Gina second. First. Dan seconded. Any further questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, then that passes.
Good. Thank you
Chief.
For that and thank you for the comment. So
be useful in the future.
Okay. Unfinished business.
I got one. At our last meeting, Scutney Street was brought up to us. And when we left that meeting, they had a completion date of in November. I really want to appreciate the staff getting together, Terry, Gino, Eamon, to get that date pushed into October a little bit sooner. It makes it a lot easier for me to support that project with that completion date.
Business?
I got one other thing.
Okay.
New business. Our park is, Lions Park is getting very, very busy lately with activities, and I see in the future, hopefully a lot more are planned. Every time I see there's activity going on, I see Evergreen Stage going by. I bet it's been used there quite a bit in the past. Something I think, though, that we need to look at in the future is possibly building a stage down there where they set that one up in the park for the future. A great addition down in that area.
Well, the budget process is coming up, so I think that's a great thing. Let's put it in there, see where it goes. Oh, that's a good idea. Good idea. Any other new business?
Any reports on the pool?
To recap, Saturday morning the pool went down. There were several pumps and fluorinators and everything just kind of went offline. We had a gauge that flew clear across the mechanical room. Maintenance people think it was some sort of water hammer that hit in the system. We got it all put back together today. We ran up to Mother's Lake. We needed one part, and it pulls up and runs out of the clock. I did send out an email about that.
Any other new business?
Thanks to Terry and his crew.
Good job. Okay, well then, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you everybody for coming. Turn off your mics, everybody, just in case you don't forget.
Molly. I told her to slow down at her presentations. She did good.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes to...
Staff. Talking about the task orders? The task orders?
Yeah, I got them for tomorrow.
Okay.
So did we go with production now? Or?
No, we went up to 20,000. Remember, you and I talked about doing this or not doing this. We went to committee. Committee said, no, we don't want to spend the money. And here they voted $20,000 to do it. So we're going to get the evaluation by Kevin Lindsay, the hydrogeologist. That's all they voted on.
I know.